What's up, world? It's Spotty Wi-Fi, the king of the crypto punks, and you are now tuned in to Fired Up on the Blockchain with my guy, Travi.
I'm like, Travi, come on now. Like, you got this under control.
What's up? It's your Web3 bestie, Liz Morrison, and I'm Toy Encendida en la cadena de bloques con Travi.
Yo, it's your boy Nessie Dorilla from the east to the west. You already know who does it best. We fired up on the blockchain with Travi. Let's go.
Yo, what's up? It's G Love, and I'm fired up with Travi.
Yeah. I'm Juliet from the So Cool Girls, and I'm fired up with Travi.
What up, y'all? This is Sammy Ariaga. I'm fired up on the blockchain with Travi.
I'm Ray Isla, and I'm fired up on the blockchain with Travi.
Hi, I'm Leah from Power of Women, and I'm fired up with Travi.
Aloha, everyone. This is your boy Yassad with the band Pepper, and I'm fired up on the blockchain with my boy Travi. All right.
This is OSF, and I'm getting wrecked with Travi.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and degens, for the thousands in attendance and the millions listening in podcast land. My name is Travi, and we are fired up on the blockchain.
Hey, Travi, let's effing go. I get a little
fired up. Welcome to Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi. This is Travi, and I'm so fired up because one of my favorite bands is here, Yassad Williams, the drummer of the band Pepper. If you may know Pepper as one of the few bands that's actually known for carrying the torch after Sublime to continue that reggae rock genre. And if you are a fan of that genre now, you may know of a lot of bands and you probably already know Pepper is. But you may not know the whole backstory and history to what got Pepper going. Pepper's been around making albums since 2000 or so. They met in high school in the 90s in Kona, and they've been going at it hard, and they've got a brand new single called Get Me Ready. Pepper's on tour right now, and Yassad Williams, the drummer of Pepper, is going to talk all about the history of Pepper and what led to what's going on now, and give us some really interesting takes on music on the blockchain in the future. Yassad Williams of Pepper, so let's get into it. So all of you out there know one of my favorite things about the Web3 space is Web3 music. But did you know music exists far beyond the Web3 space? Actually, it's been around for quite some time. And one of my favorite bands that's been around for quite some time is celebrating the 20 years of Kona Town. And that is, of course, Pepper, straight from the 808 state of Hawaii. I'm joined today by Yassad Williams. Yee, welcome to Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi. How are you?
Very good, Travi. Thank you so much for having me, man. I'm honored to be here. And yes, music has existed way before the blockchain, as you can tell by my beard. It's been a while.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah, you've become known for having one of the coolest beards in the whole like reggae rock scene. So, you know, and that's sort of it's funny because, you know, let's first talk about Kona Town. You know, 20 years of Kona Town. I kind of think of Kona Town by Pepper as one of those albums where a lot of us sort of remember where we were when we first heard it and kind of remember what life was like. I mean, you know, I know a lot of the audience listening might be in their 20s, but, you know, a lot of people who are in the reggae rock scene really give Pepper credit for being one of those bands who have kept that reggae rock genre alive kind of post Sublime. So first of all, congratulations on 20 years of Kona Town. And second of all, what is it like to be kind of like some of the elder statesmen in the reggae rock genre? And like, what does it feel like to have so much respect from so many of the bands that are existing now?
You know, it's an absolute, I mean, this whole thing, we moved from the Big Island when we were 19 years old, and we've done nothing except play in this band ever since. So the whole thing is beyond surreal. And when you really get it down into the details of that, because I remember, I mean, we never really think of ourselves in that way. You know, we just kind of like are just following inspiration and hoping we can inspire some people on the way. And just, you know, we also consider ourselves just a comma in the sentence of this amazing story of music that we have going on. So, but I do actually remember I have a specific time when we took Tribal Seeds out on tour in I think this was like 2015 or so. And Steve and a couple of the boys, like, they just kind of broke down one day about how much Konatown meant to them and how much it inspired them. And that was kind of the first time I was like, wow, crazy. Cause I, like, for so long, it was just us and Slightly Stupid and like the Expendables and like just, there was only a few, there wasn't a reggae rock genre per se for many years from the time we started our band until maybe like 2010 or 2011. It's funny, actually, I kind of equate the reggae rock scene blowing up around the same time that streaming kind of took traction and Spotify started really coming to in like 2012, 13 was when you really saw like Iration and Revolution and all the bands really start to ramp up. And in turn, you had the festivals like Cali Roots and Reggae Rise Ups that were, and now you have Cali Vibes that were really rounding out the genre and putting a stamp on it. You know what I mean? Where it wasn't just bands rolling around trying to fit in where they could. Cause when it was, especially when it was just us and Slightly Stupid and we were touring in bands together, you know, we were pertaining to the Warped Tour scene. We were trying to pertain to, I should say. We were trying to pertain to the alternative scene. We were trying to pertain to keeping that torch of Sublime alive, like you said. You know what I mean? That's such an honor, and it still is such an honor to be, you know, I don't even like to put Sublime in because they're like, so like Bradley's like arguably like the Steve Miller of our days, or like, he's so iconic and like, so just beyond any genre is what I'm trying to say. So, I like to say that we're helping carry the torch, but I don't even really think we're carrying the same torch. It's just a spark that flew off of Sublime, and we're blessed enough to be able to catch on to that spark. And now it's turned into a fire of its own, which is the reggae rock genre. So, I mean, if we were any sort of like, path pavers or paving any way, if we inspired anyone to do their own thing that has equated to brick building of this genre, then I'm so honored, and it's truly, truly amazing. I got a DM from a drummer kid that I think he's about 15 years old from England the other day, and he told me that I was the specific reason why he started playing drums, and it really like sucked everything that we do and that we've done for the past almost 25 years into that one moment. And I was like, this is it. This is why this, like, cause I remember being a kid and listening to Injustice for All for the first time. And then my mom taking me to see Metallica, and Lars did that for me, where I was like, because of this guy, Lars, I'm going to pick up the sticks. And I'm so inspired by this guy, Lars, that to be on the other side of that and be able to inspire and have someone tell you you're the lone reason they started to pick up an instrument and start partaking in this magic that we call music is like, I don't know if there's anything more special than that. Like, you talk about being like living a life of service is one of the greatest things in the world to me. And what a service, man, to pass on something like music and something that's so, I mean, it's straight up, the way I look at music is, it's, someone told me a long, long time ago, and they blew my mind with this, that, you know, music's the only art form that you can't touch necessarily. There's no like tangible form of it where, you know, you have a painting and after you're done with it, you have the painting. Yes. Or you're a writer, you have a book afterwards. And yes, you can record. There's instruments to play music and there's technology to record music, but the actual medium of music, it's just constantly all around us. And it's like, it comes down to vibrations. And it's like what this world and every you and I and everyone is just made up of vibrations. So it's like this higher level of magic, and it literally changes how people feel. And it's like a drug that literally changes the way people feel in the most like, positive way ever, whether it's a release or whatever. So, just like a couple to answer the question of how amazing it is and how grateful we are to be just a part of that whole, enchilada, if you will, but then even down to the, specificity of the reggae rock genre, and being able to just unload our inspiration and pass it on to people is just so beautiful and so amazing. And then to touch on touching on Kona Town, like you said, it reminds people of where they were when they first heard it. It brings them back to where they were. I know music for me, when it hits on that level, it brings back smells, and I'll be like, oh, I remember that smell when I was listening to that. And in my opinion, that's just, I don't know if you want to call it, like, that's when an album or a piece of music becomes almost its own language. You know, it's like they call music is the ultimate, like, communicator. But like, when you have a specific piece of music or an album that's so special to you and it brings up all these emotions, it's like it truly becomes a voice of its own. It becomes a life of its own. So to have one album like that, and I would hope to think that we'll probably maybe have two or three when it's all said and done that have that effect. I don't even, like, you know, and for a lack of better term, it's like mission accomplished. But we're not, you know, I hear Rick Rubin say it all the time, and it's like the musicians and us, we're not the ones that makes the music great. Like, the great music already exists. You're just lucky enough to be able to tune into it and be able to accept it and be able to transmit it and whatnot. So it's like being around and having the connection that I have with my brothers in the band and being able to reach that again, it doesn't even seem real to me, you know, like I accept it with open arms and I'm so grateful, but there's part of me that like will step outside. I'm like, this doesn't even, I can't believe it. Cause I also, whenever I think about stuff like that, I can like time travel back to those days I talked about earlier when I first heard Metallica and my mom took me to the concert, and like, if you were to tell me the shit that's happening now was going to happen back then, I for sure would have been like, that's not real whatsoever. So, yeah, man, it's really like such a blessing. And like the fact that we've been able to be through so many different versions of the music industry. And it's, you know, we came around, formed the band in 97, moved to the mainland from Hawaii in 99. So, you know, we went through the CDs were selling a ton when we first started. It was all about printing up your own flyers when, you know, cause we knew nothing except, oh, we need to get a van, cause we knew Sublime, Stand By Your Van. And we knew that the live record, you obviously need a van. It sounds like when we first did Warped Tour in 1999, we didn't even know you needed merch. Like, we like got on the tour and like there a week went by and we were like, yeah, shit, all these other bands have shirts. I guess we should get some shirts made up, you know? So we went through that, you know, I guess you could say the real brick and mortar time of the music industry, which we were able to catch a little bit of, cause, that was when Give It Up first got on the radio and went to number one on alternative and everything, which was like kind of our first like transcension, that definitely caught the last end of that. Cause, I remember like just speaking of little details of like just little parts of the dream that we've lived. It's like, I remember like that getting on the radio and we were touring an RV at the time because we had graduated up from a van, but we weren't quite to the bus stage yet. And everyone hitting us up, like, you guys aren't going to believe this. And we're like playing like Jackrabbits in Jacksonville, which is basically like a 300 person cigarette den that was like just so really smell like cigarettes for like weeks after you play there. But, we were playing these like small places and everyone calling us like, your guys' song's blowing up on K-Rock in LA. Like, they're saying crazy shit. Like, they're saying like a whole, but like they're because everyone was like really like hopped up on the song, and like it had been the first like kind of like real radio play since Sublime for any bands that even sounded like us. Cause it was even before Slightly Stupid and Two in the Morning, 2 AM went real big on alternative radio. So there's a ton of excitement. And then, you know, obviously Napster happened before that, but it took some years. It took some like good 5+ years for the brick and mortar thing to really break down. Because then you probably enter, I would say, like 2008, 2009. And that was when there was like the ultimate panic of like a lot of people in the music industry, like, shit, we might need to get other jobs. Like, I don't know, like record labels are like, well, we better think about something else. It's done. It's a lot like Web3. You know what I mean? We're done. We're back. Wait, we're done. We're back. So we went.
I've got to tell you too. I was just gonna say I want to hear a little bit more, but I don't want to forget to tell you. I remember the Warped Tour days, and I feel like I want to hear a lot more too. Those Warped Tour days. One of the things I feel like a lot of people have respect for you specifically for, or because you did that grind, and then you came back to headline. Mm-hmm. And I remember too, like I was a tour manager in the mid to late 2000s for a band that was really trying to make their way in the same genre. And during that year, I believe it was like 2009, and we did the whole Warped Tour loop. That's when Dirty Heads were still coming up. Their big album, like I think maybe just dropped, or the Sublime, the Rome song Lay Me Down hadn't come out yet. It was like that summer right before that came out.
Totally.
And just seeing that grind that Jared and Dustin and David and the rest of the guys had, you know, doing the van thing every day. And seeing them show up, and at the time, I think it was called the Skull Candy stage or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And some days they'd like spin the wheel, and they'd have to go on at like 9 a.m. And then others, they were headlining at the end of the day. And that's kind of how the Warped Tour loop was. And I feel like that's why I just wanted to interject and say, I think that's why so many people have respect for you beyond the awesome beard that you have. I think a lot of people have respect for you because they saw how much that not only have you grown as a band, but they saw you really, well, like you said, like that brick and mortar.
Yeah, no, and Warped Tour. And I mean, first of all, you talk about Catalyst that kind of really jump-started this genre into what it is now, and got to big up the Dirty Heads with Lay Me Down, because that was a huge, I mean, we're in such a, you know, we call our fans our Ohana, the Pepper Ohana, and that's beyond, I think, just like the fans. I mean, that you could even say that about this genre as a whole, because everything that happens, it's like an all ships rise kind of vibe. And you definitely saw it with the Dirty Heads when that song went to number one, Lay Me Down. So it's like nothing but respect for them for helping. That was a major catalyst in what, like how I say, like the festivals were coming around and doing well. It's like the, you know, Give It Up and then 2 a.m. and then Lay Me Down, like all just really like, integral, I guess, lightning strikes to ignite the genre that we know of now and that we all love. And that's a really just blows my mind. It just seems to grow day in and day out. But yeah, I mean, I don't like the Warped Tour is some of the most special times of our whole career, just being able to go from that first year we did it in 1999, we were on the Volcom stage and the deal was we had to set up and break down the stage as so we had to be the stage crew to be on the tour. And that was something that Volcom did that was part of their bootstrapping to get a stage on the tour, is they told Kevin Lyman, like, don't worry, we don't need any workers. We'll be fully self-contained. So they would get a band that was on Volcom Entertainment on Volcom's record label to be the setup and breakdown band, which I wouldn't take it away for anything. I wouldn't change anything if we had to do it again. But like you said, it's like, that's one of those key like summers of hard work where we paid our fucking dues like a motherfucker. Like we were up before any band. We had to go find we were straight blue collar workers. We had to find the flatbed semis that had the stage on it. We had to tell the forklift guy, come over here. And this was like at 7 a.m. and and then we had to stay there after all the band. Well, in between, we had to play a half hour player set to no one, might I add. Seriously, in that Warped Tour. Oh, I'm sorry. It was 2001. 1999 was when we moved to California. But there's a 2001 Warped Tour was our first one. And that whole summer was insane. We had to play. We wake up earlier than anyone, or wouldn't wake up. We would get there. We were in a Volcom marketing van that the AC was broken. So gnarly, just, you know how gnarly the certain parts of the U.S. are during the summer. It's just insane. And so we're driving ourselves, no AC. It was a cool Volcom van. It had a bunch of Volcom stickers on it, so at least it looked cool. But we literally had to be there before all the bands So we'd get there at like 7:30. We would do the whole dance to find the stage, get the forklift to take it over to where we'd have to look at the plot. Okay, this is where all the stages go. Okay, this is where the Volcom stage is. Okay, have the forklift take all the pieces of the stage over there. And then we would sit, and it was like this 8-plank, maybe like each section of the stage was maybe like 6 feet by 4 feet wide. And it was like 8 of those with these wooden stands. And we would set all those up. And then our sound guy at the time, who's one of our best friends from Hawaii, he's smaller than all of us. So we would put him on a skateboard like a mechanic and roll him under the stage, because he went under and had to do the screw in like stable brackets or whatever, or whatever you want to call them, the safety clamps, so the piece of the stage wouldn't come apart. Which, flash forward to the Arizona show, that same Warped Tour, and Coheed and Cambria were just starting their ascension in the blowing up. So they were on the Volcom stage actually, but unlike us, they would have like 1,000 people at this small side stage every day. And I remember in Arizona, all the Volcom like guys that were on the tour that worked for Volcom all of a sudden ran over to us halfway through Coheed set and said, "Get under the stage now," because the stage was splitting under Claudio's feet. So Claudio from Coheed and Cambria is just ripping, just absolutely crushing a set for like 1,500 people in Arizona in the hot sun. And lo and behold, the clamp or the safety clamp starts to like give out and the stage starts to fully split. And we're like, oh my God, we're going to watch Claudio just full whack-a-mole just disappear in the bottom. So again, we had to get our sound man. We threw him on the skateboard, threw him under like a mechanic, and he got that thing. He's a real strong guy. Got that thing back together, secured, and Claudio was safe. And the rest is history. And Coheed and Cambria's career went on. But we thought we were going to, literally halfway through the tour, we were like, I don't even know if we're going to make it. Like, this is so gnarly. Like, I think we were considering, like, maybe we just go back to Hawaii after this. Like, I don't even know. And on top of it, like I said, we were playing to no one ever. No one knew who we were. That's why. And we were next to the second stage, because the Volcom stage would technically be the third stage. The second stage, which was right next to us, which was alternating. So it'd be the Volcom stage and the second stage back and forth sets, half hour each band. On the second stage was Sum 41 and Good Charlotte. And they were absolutely blowing up huge. But they had signed the contract to be on the second stage before Warped Tour started. So, and they weren't that big then. So that's how Warped Tour works, though. There's no headliners. It's a big festival. You play, like you said earlier, at midnight or at 8 p.m. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter how big you are. It's just random. So point being is, when we would play after Good Charlotte and Sum 41, there would be thousands of people watching them going off circle pits. Like, we would just be like waiting on the Volcom stage for our set. And we'd just be like, please, please, just 50 of these 2,000 people, just please stay and watch. And then they would finish. We'd go 3, 4, I've been waiting. It was going to hose, like, I don't know, something. And we would watch thousands of people just pay no mind to us and just walk by and go probably to the main stage. And we'd be left with like 3 people watching us. So that was just all part of the hard work. And it's like, I look at it back now and I'm just like, thank God for those days. Cause there was such like character building and such, just kind of, you know, the stuff we got hit in the face with, the stuff that is the unglorious or inglorious, vibe of the music industry. Cause you know, I mean, it is for some people, some bands blow up in a second and like, they don't even ever tour in a band, but that's like, of like 1 in a million, you know. It's like, majority of the time, if you want to break resistance in the music industry, you need to buckle down and realize there's going to be years and years and years of hard work and years of those character building experiences of, like, for lack of a better term, of getting shit on, you know what I mean? Of either, whether it's you being like, God, this is so heavy. Like, I don't know when are we going to break some resistance? When are people going to start noticing and whatnot? And that can get to you after a while, you know, and it's like the whole, like, irrational faith or like just blind faith is like, it's so key, not just in the music industry, but just in anything. If you believe in yourself and you believe in what you're doing, then like blind faith is so is so healthy, and a bit of irrationality is very healthy as well. Cause, you know, like a lot of things, like Rome wasn't built in a day. It's like a lot of great bands, they weren't great to start with, and it takes a while. So whether it's, you know, the your live show, you've got to work out, whether it's your songwriting, you've got to work out, whether it's your dynamic between your band, you've got to work out. I mean, there's so much involved, I guess. And that Warped Tour, that first Warped Tour in 2001 was like the, like that on like what would it be, like a copper platter or something, you know what I mean? Like definitely wasn't silver, but it was like right in our face. Like, here it is, guys. If you want to do this, you said, careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Yeah. You gotta, for sure. I'm glad you got to tell a lot of that story. That's why I really didn't want to interject, because I think a lot of people, when they hear a band for the first time, they don't realize sometimes how much time it's spent to get to that point. And when I think about that time period, a little bit after that too, like you mentioned, when it was just you guys or, you know, Pepper and Slightly Stupid. I remember people were asking when I was telling them, hey, there's this band called Pepper you got to hear. And the term reggae rock wasn't even a thing. And I was like, well, if you picture Sublime, but like take out some of the punk, put a little bit more rock into it and like, you know, a little bit cleaner production, because a lot of the early Sublime stuff was a little rougher. And then you're trying to explain it to people and you kind of like lose them by the third. But then you play it and it was fine, because, you know, eventually they heard Ashes and everything was, they were like, oh, okay, like I could go with this. And then, you know, to today. Yeah. I mean, and you've got a brand new single that's out now. I do want to say too, called Get Me Ready, which, you know, I love that one. I tweeted about that last week. We played it on the way out to date night. It wound up being a great night. And I think I have you guys to thank for that. And probably a lot of babies in this world have Pepper to thank for the start of their parents' evening. But, you know, you guys have been doing this for so long. And, you know, you mentioned some bands too. I think of Revolution as like one of mine that like I'll always try to catch them all the time. And, you know, and everybody just always not only knows Pepper, but shows so much love and thanks to Pepper. I don't know if you guys were around, if you weren't around and Slightly Stupid wasn't around, and you mentioned Expendables, if there wasn't you guys to bridge that gap, who knows like what direction that genre would have been in, or if it would have existed. But, you know, I want to hit on something else too, because I know you're touring, you're all over the place. You're going to be on the East Coast very, very soon, and you'll be down in Mexico for some stuff, some of the bigger festivals and stuff. But along the way, you and Pepper, the boys, started Law Records. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I want to touch on for sure, because I don't know if everyone understands the story to the name. I know a lot of us who follow you and are, you know, in that business know what Law Records is for. But first of all, can you tell people a little bit about, you know, the name and sort of what Law Records is, and what is it like to start your own, you know, record label?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the whole origin with my dad and everything and my dad's band.
God. Well, I do. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I definitely want the listeners to hear it.
I just want to give you your flowers, though. That's amazing, Travi. I love that you're so detailed. That's much respect.
Oh, dude, for sure. Yeah, like I said, I'm a student of this game, and, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. But, you know, yeah, the law, you know, the law was something that, you know, that came pre-Pepper. And I love that you're able to kind of pay homage to your pops and keep it going.
So, yeah, so to give everyone out there the rundown, so my dad was the singer and lead guitar player of a three-piece hair metal band in the early 80s. And he was kind of going back and forth. It was when the Sunset Strip was everything, to, you know, when Motley Crue got signed, when Rat got signed, when all those bands got signed, which is, it's funny. We always talk about it. Like I think Kaleo was talking to me the other day. He's like, what do you think it would have been easier to gain traction as a band back in like the 70s. And I'm like, I think so, because there was a lot less bands. So the competition wasn't as hard, but the one argument though is the barrier for entry was a lot higher, because you needed a full blown studio. You want to record anything back in the 80s or 70s, you need a full blown professional studio with professional microphones, with 2-inch tape that costs like $500 to $800 a reel. If you want to edit it, you got to have someone that knows how to cut tape. And like, so now the barrier of entry with digital recording has gone way down. So it's easier to get to the playing field. But once you're at the playing field nowadays, there's a lot more competition. So back talking about when my dad guys were on the Sunset Strip scene, it seemed back to how it seemed like it was, for lack of a better term, less competitive. It seemed like you could just blow up on the Sunset Strip and you were good. And it would translate to the rest of the country. Like you didn't even really need to go out and be touring a ton until you made that first level up where you were like, okay, we've graduated from the Sunset Strip. Now we're going on tour with Ozzy Osbourne. Or it would translate from like Sunset Strip success to some major national tour. You'd be supporting someone like on an arena. So my dad, true to Pepper, even my dad's band, The Law, was the name of it. And the logo for the record label Law Records was actually his band's logo, the chiseled stone, text of, Law that we have for the record label, was his band's logo. So they were crushing it too. They were like Anthrax was opening up for them. They opened up for Def Leppard at Gazzari's, which is like, it was the Key Club, I think, but it's still there. It's just changed a million different names, but it was, you know, it was like 1,000-seater that Van Halen was at that level. And my dad guys were opening up for him. And so anyway, they recorded, their debut album, which was called None Escape. So it was called None Escape the Law. And, just didn't get the right deal, you know, nothing was satisfying them. So they decided to take their, destiny in their own hands. And they just said, why don't we just release it on our own label? And that's actually where Law Records was born in 1983 to release the debut album of my dad's band, The Law. So they released the album and then they kind of succumbed to all the basically stereotypical, especially in the 80s, things that'll break a band down. And that was the drummer got arrested for dealing cocaine. The bunch of money was lost, a bunch of, you know, all these things that are just your stereotypical horror stories of bands kind of happened to them right after. But it was also right in the time that I think I was probably like 3 or 4 years old at the time. So it just turned in to me, it was just like this amazing lush, musical landscape that I got to grow up in. And then, so that's basically where, if you want to fast forward to 2003, which was our second Warped Tour, we always grew up on all the Epitaph bands, Pennywise, No Effects, Bad Religion, No Fun at All, No Use for a Name. I mean, all, once we got turned on to the independent punk rock from like the second wave of punk rock through Surf Videos, specifically a filmmaker named Taylor Steele, and his videos were Momentum 2, Focus. We got turned on to all of it, and it blew our minds to pieces. Hearing those first two Pennywise albums, hearing No Effects, hearing all this music that was like, it wasn't so like shiny and it wasn't so like out of touch, I guess. We first heard bands like Pennywise and like No Effects, and we're like, wow, that was maybe the first, I don't think we ever consciously said this, but I think that was the first subconscious like inkling of like, oh, this is what we could do. You know what I mean? Like these are like kindred spirits in a sense. Like granted they're older than us, and I would say in Hawaiian terms, they were more our uncles, you know what I mean? But it was like a coattail, for lack of a better term, that we could grab onto, where you like see like bands like Metallica and any mainstream bands, and you're like, they're like superhero giants on stage. That's so out of this world that's not attainable at all. So growing up on all those bands, and even that's where we first heard Sublime, because Sublime was on a Surf video called Momentum 2, and it was Hope, which was the Descendants cover, which when I first heard it, I didn't even know. Well, like I think I'd heard of the Descendants, but didn't know any of their music. So I thought Sublime at first was just, again, for lack of a better term, another punk rock band. which, wow, were we in for a treat, because like just hearing that one song, hearing the Hope cover, I was like, wow, this Sublime band's like they're kind of like all these other punk rock bands, but like this guy Bradley's voice is like nothing I've ever heard before. And then a buddy from the mainland moved to the Big Island and he had the 40 ounces to freedom CD. And I was like, holy shit, that's what that, where that song from that surf video is from. And then he threw it on and I heard Don't Push. And I was like, stolen from an African lad chased out of the night with a face like Bob Marley. What's going on here? And I was like, damn, this is epic though. But I didn't put together that it was reggae yet. I was just like, wow, they have some melodic shit. Like, this is so catchy, so amazing. And then just our mind was blown. And then you lead to like Stand By Your Van. And that's like what really was a heavy catalyst to get Pepper going. But then get to 2003. And that was the second Warped Tour we were on. And this was a really awesome one because we had a van that had AC. We had like a brand new Ford Econo line that had AC. We didn't have to set up and break down the stage. We just had to show up, play our half hour set, and then go to the merch booth and kiss some babies, shake some hands, and try and sell some merch. And it was just awesome. We were like, this is what we moved from Hawaii to do. We're doing it, you guys. Like, this is amazing. And I remember, which I kind of think, I don't know, we'll just go with it, because I really actually think it might have been around the same day or definitely during the same run of the Florida shows of Warped Tour 2003. But I remember in Orlando when we got on stage and I looked out and I was like, wait, there's like 200 people at the stage. Like, what's going on here? Like, maybe they think Good Charlotte's playing or something. That was the Warped Tour before. But I was like, because we weren't used to people showing up yet. Like, it was kind of the first time that started happening was at this Orlando show. And then I remember starting the set and I was like, holy shit, everyone knows our songs. And then I remember we played Give It Up and everyone was like clapping along to like where the kick drum is before on the floor. Absolutely. For the chorus part of the Why Don't You Have. So everyone's like clapping along. And I was like, it's working. Like, holy, oh my God, you guys, like it's working. We're like 4 or 5 years into this thing and it's actually working. I couldn't believe it. And then before we put out Kona Town, I'm sure you are aware, maybe not everyone out there, but I know you are, Travi. We had an album, which was basically like a glorified demo called Given It. And some say it's our first official studio release. Some say Kona Town is, but you know, tomato, tomato. But the point of Given It was we didn't do a deal with anyone for that album. Because when we first moved to California, and we linked up with Volcom. Volcom was like, well, let's concentrate on making a new album with you guys. Like, if you guys want to print those up yourself, we'll line you up with our CD manufacturer and you can print it up. So that's all. We printed up like 1,000 copies, but there was no like deal for Given It. So during that same run, and I almost think it might've been stemming from the inspiration of that Orlando show and us being like, oh my God, I can't believe it's actually working. We're connecting, guys. I can't believe it. Our music's actually starting to connect. That we thought, wait, we should get our own version of Epitaph, or we need to get our Fat Mike from NoFX. He has Fat Records. Like, we need to do, or like Sub Pop. We were always big fans of Sub Pop because of what they did with the whole grunge scene and everything. And you know, so we were like, wait, we need to have our own record label. And we had no idea why. We didn't know any. We just knew that the bands we loved had their own record labels, AKA Mr. Brett from Bad Religion and Epitaph and Fat Mike and Fat Records. Specifically, those two were our main kind of impetus. And yeah, so we were like, well, what can we call it? And then we were like, we got my dad's band and we got the logo, we'll call it Law Records. And then we were like, okay, cool. Okay, what should we? And then it just hit us. We were like, wait, we could re-release Given It and that'll be our first official like Law Records release. So we ended up putting like, I think like a couple live versions of songs on it and like maybe like a couple demos and just did this like deluxe version. It was a CD at the time, obviously, of Given It. And that was it. And we put it through some independent distribution. And if any record stores wanted to order it, they could order it. And we were up and running. We're like, we have a label and we're on. And that was kind of like the victory at that point. That was almost like the finish line at that point. We're like, we have a label. We can make shirts now that say Law Records and we can wear them. And it's like, and actually, I'm sorry, I'm leaving out Skunk Records. But
of Skunk course,
Records
yeah.
was another one, because obviously Sublime having Skunk Records. So I retract that statement. Yeah, I mean, it was devastating. It was Brett for Bad Religion and Epitaph. It was Fat Mike, Fat Records, and it was Miguel and the Sublime Boys and Skunk Records. And just everything they were putting out, because, I mean, that's how we first heard about Slightly Stupid, was Cleo's brother had actually lived in California for a while and actually started dating Troy Noel maybe like 2 years after Bradley passed away. So a year or two after we started the band, he was the one that said, like, hey, if you guys ever move to the mainland or get to the mainland, I'll link you up with the Slightly Stupid Boys. And that was before we even did Warped Tour. We went down to Ocean Beach. We linked up with Miles, Kyle, and Adam, the original drummer. They were just a three-piece at the time. They only had Longest Barrel Ride probably had come out 6 months or 8 months before that. So we were rocking that thing for about 6 months before we moved to California. And we were like, what? Like, I mean, you know, that Longest Barrel Ride album is like straight. You talk about carrying a torch from Sublime. And when I heard that Longest Barrel Ride album, I was like, yes, yes, this hasn't ended. Cause obviously Bradley had died. And you know, it's like, oh, well, we're probably not going to get much more Sublime music, obviously, unless they have some stuff that was pre-recorded before he passed away and whatnot. So hearing that Longest Barrel Ride album was such an inspiration to us, because not only were we like, oh, there's another band out there that is like doing it, but it was like a direct descendant of Sublime. And like, you know, we knew that that they had done the Ain't No Profit song that Miles and him wrote, that Bradley ended up releasing as a Sublime song. And that was massive when we came right over. And actually we went down to Ocean Beach, linked up with them via Cleo's brother, and they invited us to play and open up for him at Winston's, their hometown venue. And we'll never forget it. Like, Miles just took us under his wing. He gave us our first tuning pedal, because he probably heard us play and was like, yo, you guys, you probably want to think about some tuning pedals. So we always joke about that. I mean, you got to think about, like, it started, our relationship with those brothers started then in 1999. And we just did an amphitheater tour together the last summer. It's like the whole surrealness of this whole thing, like I was talking about earlier, how it almost seems fake. I mean, I think about that. I'm like, these brothers that we met like almost 25 years ago, we're still doing shit with, but at the like such a higher level. And it just makes me really proud of everyone and of our band and just of my brothers and of Stupid and just everyone. But and then to go back to the label though, you know, I think all those instances I was talking about earlier, with like the character building and all the hard work we did on that first Warped Tour, those are the things that I bring to our label, and is, you know, the things I talk about with younger artists. And, you know, I think of all the value that has brought us just doing that one Warped Tour. The value that Warped Tour in 2001 brought us is priceless, not just for, like you were talking about earlier, it's like, if there's no Slightly Stupid, or if they're like, things might be different. They might not be the same. There might not be this genre. Who knows? You know what I mean? It's like the choose your own adventure. It could have turned out totally different. So I think the same thing with like our specific path, where it's like, man, if we wouldn't have done Warped Tour that in 2001, then maybe things would be different. We wouldn't have, taken the same path and chosen the same adventure and whatnot. But it's like, so that's just all, there's so much value from that, even to down to you know, lessons that I learned that I could hopefully pass on to the younger artists that we're developing on the label.
I think one of the things that a lot of people really love about you, and even just through your music, you know, beyond the interviews, is they can really feel not only the passion, but all of the stories that you just told really come to life when you're playing. Like, it's like you always have a smile on your face. You're always doing your thing. And as you mentioned, you're always passing it down. And you're looking at, you know, for me as a fan of you and the reggae rock genre, you know, I think think about Law Records, right? And I think about some of the folks who have been through, like, huge fan of Catch a Fire, like huge fan of Black Uhuru, HR from Bad Brains you have on there. I didn't realize the house that Bradley built was actually through Law Records. I actually just found that out. And I mean, we've been listening to that for a couple of years now, but that's sick that you were able to put that out. And then I know there's some others that you have on there, but you did mention Bradley and his legacy. And speaking of legacies, I hope it's okay to bring this up. You know, there's somebody else. I'm curious what you think their legacy is going to be, because, you know, gone way too soon. You know, and that's Catastro.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I told you in a DM, that was something that actually hit me when I was watching, I think it was Cali Roots, you know, last year, and Law, all the Law guys came out and did a tribute. What do you think, you know, even though it was kind of gone too young, too soon, that kind of thing, what do you think, you know, the legacy of Catastro might be? You know, in obviously you carried, you and Law Records carrying a little bit of that torch as well. What do you think, you know, a lot of people are going to remember about Catastro?
I mean, I think definitely, like, I think that album that we did with them, that Strange Nights album, is so special and just such a special moment in time that was captured. We met them in 2014 on the tour with us and the Dirty Heads. They were the opener in the 2014 tour. And I remember we just gravitated towards each other. And by the end of the tour, we were hanging out all the time. Like Stravs was my boy. You know what I mean? I was like, just drummer to drummer. You're always like, yeah. And like, he's such a beast of a drummer on top of it that I was just, simply, I was just so impressed. I was so impressed by them. I listened to their album that they had out at that time, all the time. And I was like, so blown away. And then, that was kind of, it's funny, 'cause that was kind of the time when we were like going to go full blown again with the label, because right before that we had our self-titled album that we put out on Island Def Jam. So we were kind of going through the major label cycle for the second time, because No Shame was on Atlantic as well. So we were going through the major label cycle with our self-titled album. And that's like so involved that you just like, you want to make the most out of it. You want to take all the steam you possibly can when you get a chance to go down the major label route. And of course, you want to do it in the right way, though. And that's the way we always did it. We made sure we had the right deal, because you also hear horror stories of like people just getting so screwed by major labels and like either getting shelved and they can't get their music out, this and that. But when it's done right, I think it can be such a spark to and gas on the fire of your business and your band. So when we were going through that cycle, it was kind of like all hands on deck and just trying to make the most and extract the most out of the major label system that we could to take with us. If, you know, I mean, we, at that point we're like, maybe we'll do another record with them. Maybe not. We don't know. But lo and behold, that ended up being the one record we did with them. And then the next year was 2014. And that's right before that tour with Dirty Heads. And we decided, we're like, okay, I think we're done with major labels. Let's just do our own record label, and not only with our own music, but let's ramp this thing up. And let's like, there at that point, we saw it. We're like, there's this genre of reggae rock just really flourishing all around us. So, you know, the universe works in mysterious ways, and you always got to be paying attention, because, you know, the magic is happening everywhere. And I think plopping us onto that tour and having Catastro be the opener was that magic that was presented to us. And it was right at the time where we're like, let's go full on into this thing. So on top of making the record, Kaleo produced the record. So he spent like about a month in our studio, and we had just gotten our studio together maybe like a year or two before that, which is called Kona Town Recording in Redondo Beach, California. And it's got a crazy history, 'cause it's Pennywise's old studio that they recorded they recorded Straight Ahead and Land of the Free at. And so it's got this like crazy history and was like handed down to us because Pennywise wasn't like, they weren't in the business of having their own studio anymore. So yeah, all these things lined up perfectly. And we were like, perfect. Clay wanted to produce the record. The Castro Boys had these amazing songs started. So they spent about, I'd say a month straight making that record before the Castro Boys went and did all the finishing touches and everything in Arizona. And yeah, I mean, just every time you listen to that record, every time I listen to it, it's just, it's so special. And I think that is a real anchor in their legacy that will continue forever, in my opinion. And you know, I know they're working on new music too. And I really like, can't wait to hear. And I don't know. I talk to people and I go back and forth where I'm like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. Would Andy want them to keep going? Maybe like, maybe, but it's such a tough thing, man. I'm like trying to get an original member replaced, no matter who it is. But then on top of that, trying to get the lead singer. I mean, the only thing I can think of is like AC/DC where that worked out. Like where does a new singer usually work out good? So, I just think that their existing legacy before the just absolute tragedy that happened with Andy is so potent and so powerful, and it's so special. And they captured so much of that magic that we talk about that, I think it's going to grow and it's just going to keep on, living on because, you know, again, this like harkens back to what I was saying earlier. It's not necessarily the people that are making the magic. It's the magic that exists always. And I think Catastro's magic will exist always and will always bring people back to those smells and those moments and will create more moments. And you know what I mean? It's like, it's rad because it breaks my heart so much, but it also is so special that, we could be part of a comma in the sentence of their magic, you know, and just, you know, continue to celebrate how special it will continue to be. And yeah, I think it just in a nutshell, it's going to keep growing and it's going to keep finding new avenues and it's going to keep affecting more people's lives. And it's going to, just make people happy. Cause that's what we're all here doing is we're just trying to make people happy and illuminate people's lives, you know?
Yeah. That aloha spirit that you guys bring to your Ohana. I mean, I look, still looking around, you see kids walking around today, still they'll wear like a Sublime t-shirt and stuff. And I don't think that there's any reason why, you know, some of the bands that we just mentioned and, you know, specifically Catastro isn't going to be one of those that, you know, future generations like just have on their playlist and continue to listen to. But, and I think about musicians right now trying to do their thing, right? Some that aren't on labels. So one of the main reasons I wanted to ask you about what it was kind of like to go through, you know, your own record label was because we see a lot, and I'm going to kind of take it to Web3 for a second. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of musicians really trying to sell their music on the blockchain, and it really has that indie label, that indie artist feel again. And a lot of it is because they did it in the traditional way, or, you know, they sold, you know, and did pretty well, or maybe they did get shelved. There's some of mine I've had on previous episodes, and a lot of them have different stories for how they got to Web3. So being somebody who has kind of put your own label together and been doing it as long as you guys have, is there any like word of advice you might have for somebody who is trying to start it up, maybe more on like the independent side of things? And now, like, you know, people aren't selling the CDs and tapes out of the back of their trunks anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to develop a little bit of a fan base and sell it through the blockchain and Web3 and NFTs. What would some advice you have be for someone just trying to crack it open?
And you're talking about just trying to crack open a music career in general or via Web3?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in general, but right now it feels like so many people who are trying to go the indie route are looking at the blockchain, looking at Web3 as a vehicle to do that. So yeah, just curious kind of what path, like maybe if you were starting out now, like you might tell some people like this is a good way to go.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think like there's definitely no one way to do it. Like, I don't think anyone should be specifically like, I'm just doing the Web 2 thing and I'm just like going to cater to the DSPs and whatnot. Cause I look at a band like Avenged Sevenfold and everything they're doing in Web 3 and the way that they're using the smart contract. And it's not necessarily to consume their music. It's more to enhance the fan experience. And it's like, I mean, with the blockchain, you can make like, talk about KYC and talk about like knowing your customer, AKA knowing your fan. There's no better way to have a direct line to each one of your fans than on the blockchain, because you can super serve them like no other because you know, there's authenticity, there's the ledger, there's everything where you can, like, I just think of VIP experiences and like right now in a Web 2 VIP experience, you can line up a meet and greet IRL. You can send them some exclusive merch that maybe you're not going to sell anywhere else. And you know, any kind of memorabilia that is exclusive to that. And, or even if you want to go deeper, an exclusive track or something like that. But there's no way to like, there's no way to know like what kind of fans you're dealing with. But when you have something that's linked to the blockchain, like that's why I bring up, Avenged Sevenfold, because their whole tour, their whole ticketing system that they have for their fan club is all on blockchain. So there's the way they can tell which fans are the most devoted. There's ways they can reward those people that are most devoted. There's no way of like gaming the system per se. And there's no way of a huge thing is, it's funny, it's picked up over the last few years, is the scammers for tickets in like all the comment sections of Instagrams and everything has just been running rampant. Like we've never, these last two tours, we've never had more people that come up to us like after the show, like, oh, we're so bummed, we missed the show because we got scammed, our tickets didn't work, like this and that, where that kind of thing would never happen on the blockchain because everything's verified. Everything's absolutely solid. The problem is right now though, as far as the user experience, you're not going to get anywhere close to Spotify or Apple Music or anything like that. Like, it's hard to get the music fan to buy an NFT as a piece of music and listen to it as their everyday music. It's just the user experience isn't there yet. Will it be there at some point? I think so. I think that's kind of the next paradigm shift, where I talk about how our band's been through so many of them, the brick and mortar, the free downloading via LimeWire and Kazaa and everything. And now the monetized streaming. And then I think the next one is going to be blockchain, like basically all the content and all the music and everything on the blockchain. And then on top of it, AI is going to exist somewhere in there as well. Because there is a thought that in the future, there's going to be a bunch of AI versions of bands. Like, for instance, there could be 100 different Peppers out there. But via the blockchain, you'll be able to tell which one the real one is, because we will be verifying it and everyone will know this is the real Pepper right here. There's these other ones too. And right on, it's rad, because the ones that like maybe don't get noticed, they never even get heard really. It was just a fun little pleasure project to do for someone at home, which that exists now. You know what I mean? There's cover bands, or not even bands, that just make cover versions of songs. And some of them are really good and they get noticed by the algorithm and a shitload of people hear them, or they go viral. And then, but everyone knows that it's not the real band. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think there's going to be a souped up version of that with AI, where, I mean, no one's stopping it. Like, it's here to stay, and it's already taken on a complete life of its own. So, I think I subscribe to the whole thing of let's not fight against it. Let's embrace it and see how it could enhance music and how it can enhance the music experience and the making of it, the listening of it, everything.
Right. Like as a tool, like I feel like if it's a tool to make somebody or a musician or an artist, you know, give their creativity a little kick, then I feel like that's all right too. But when you've got an AI Drake, you know, and then you've got all those, the AI rappers making all the AI Pepe songs, like it's kind of fun in the moment. But it's funny because I've always heard people talk about validating the fan experience, right? You get to see your fans through the blockchain. But this is the first time I heard an artist talk about validating the fact that they are the artist. That is a really unique take on it. So if you're out there listening, proof of pepper is what we need on the blockchain. Like there's proof of ownership left and right, but I think it's about making sure that you're buying what it is, and that goes you know, along with the art, like the regular sort of art that we would buy because we like to look at it. But what a unique take on the AI music component of things, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Let me just give you one more that I heard. Another really kind of rad take on leaning into AI for the betterment of their own band. And there's a new, they've been around for about 10 years, but they've recently blown up really big. And they're the band's name's King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. You heard of them yet?
Yeah, I've heard, but haven't had a whole lot of time with it yet.
Yeah, they are mad. Their tour they're on right now, they're from Australia. They're on tour in the US right now, and they sold out 4 nights at Red Rocks. They sold out 3 nights in Chicago at the place we're playing with Stick Figure this summer. They're like doing the most insane business I've ever seen in a long time, especially from, they're technically a jam band. The reason my wife found them on one of the Ween chats, because our family is diehard Ween fans, and Ween fans gravitated towards them. And then next thing you know, I'm like, wait a second. Oh my God, these guys have blown up like from in the span of hearing about them, maybe like 8 months ago to this summer, they're selling out multiple nights at like the biggest amphitheaters in the country. But the reason I bring them up is because I read a billboard.com article where the singer and songwriter of King Gizzard, he is going to use AI. And his goal is to release, I think, 120 albums in the next like 18 months, because his use case is very interesting. So he's a very prolific songwriter. And I guess in the 10 years they've been a band, they've released about like 30 albums or something. So he says when he gets headed down a path of inspiration to write a song, there's always these sidebars coming off of it. And if he heads down one of those sidebars, he potentially will lose the original idea that he was heading down. So he says what he's doing is any of these sidebar ideas, he just feeds them to the AI, to ChatGPT or whatever he's using, and they finish that idea for him. So he can keep going along the path and finish his original idea. But by the time he's done finishing that one song, he's got like 10 sidebars going out that the AI finished the idea for. So in turn, he's writing music like 10 times as fast as normal. So that blew me away, because that was a billboard.com article. And like that use case for AI, I was like, well, it's already on brand because the guy's releasing multiple albums a year anyway. And then just leaning into it and using it to throw gas on the fire of his own band was brilliant to me.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. I'm looking at him now, and I think we're gonna have to hit play on this after the interview for sure. I mean, because that's some unique stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, I promised you a half hour. It's already been an hour. So what I want to do is, I do have some questions I want to throw at you for sure.
Yeah,
and thank you so much for your time. If I had like 5 minutes with Pepper and Yi, like what would I ask? So, and because it's a Web3 podcast with a lot of music love on it, I'm trying to combine them all. So here's a couple of questions that I specifically have. So first of all, I think the obvious question is like, we all have an origin story that brought us to Web3. So I think my first question is like, what got you involved in the Web3 space, whether it's crypto or NFTs, and maybe equally importantly, like what's kept you here?
Okay. So, I mean, I guess at first it was just, buying a little bit of crypto in like 2017, like when I first downloaded Coinbase or whatever, and absolutely blowing it and buying Litecoin instead of Bitcoin. But hey, you know, we all make mistakes. But
yeah, we all have those. Yeah.
and then I was like, I was just like all my personal investments, I kind of treat them as like gambling and kind of just like a, for fun. Cause like any of my like real money, I let the professionals handle it. I don't trust myself with it. So I was trading stocks at the same time too, just for that same kind of, fun per se. And then let's see, it was December of 2021. And a good friend of mine and the band's Matt Sullivan, he and a buddy of his that like, they like minted Bored Apes and everything. And they were going to launch their own NFT project. So I just was being a friend of his. I was like, oh, how can I support? Like it was on Polygon. And so he was like, well, here, this is what you got to do. And he like, I had to do the Umbria bridge to like bridge my funds to mint this thing on Polygon and like did the whole thing. And then I was like, right when I did the mint, I was like, oh, that was fun. That was interesting. Right on. And I kind of didn't think a ton of it. And then it was funny because then right around that same time, it was like a bunch of musicians like Duddy, Rome, everyone was on Twitter. So I was like, oh, I'm going to get back on Twitter. And then I saw Rome posted about the Ron English's Crypto Light Club or sorry, Ron, I'm probably butchering it, but it was his NFT project, which he had actually, let me rewind a little bit. About 4 or 6 months before this first mint I did of my buddy's project on Polygon, the same buddy told me to download the VV app and buy this McFarlane Batman for like $70 or something like that, because it was like the original Batman that this McFarlane guy, I forget his first name, the artist, was doing and dropping it on the VV app. So that was, you know, VV's like the most like web 2 shit ever. Like I didn't know it then, but at the time I loaded up my debit card or whatever, and I bought the Batman for like $70. And I thought, I was like, cool, I've got NFT exposure. I'm good. And then I kind of didn't think anything of it until then, but I was hearing about everything. I was hearing about Top Shot. I was hearing about fucking, Collie Buds had a Bored Ape. I was hearing about his Bored Ape that it was, I remember when he posted it was worth 20, when it was worth 20 grand, I was like, what the, I was like, whoa, what's going on? And so those are those times when you think back and you're like, God damn it. Why wasn't I buying CryptoPunks and shit back then? Like what the fuck? But hey, hindsight's 2020. So, but it's, to my defense at the time, I was like, I got this McFarlane thing on BV. I'm good. Little did I know like how centralized and whatnot. And then, so flash forward back to minting the same buddy's NFT project on Polygon. And then about a week later, seeing Rome post about the Crypto Light Club. And it was basically Ron English, the old school artist, did all these light bulb type of art pieces. And he did, I think it was a 10,000 piece generative collection. So I was like, oh, Rome, what's this all about? He's like, oh, brother, you got to check it out. And he like sent me the link and this and that. And I was like, I had obviously been in my MetaMask for the Polygon thing. And then I just went back to it. And I think I already had some ETH in it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm in this, this like crypto club thing. And that was the first generative NFT mint I did. And so that was the full, like that gave me the full, like back to a little kid collecting baseball cards. And I was like, oh, that felt like opening a pack of baseball cards. Like that was, I like to see what I got and like the whole deal. And so I was like, oh, that's when I was like, okay, this is rad. This is super rad. And then it kind of just snowballed from there. And then the whole bull market hit and like everyone was just crushing it. And then, so from then it went after the like crypto club, it went to my buddy had been buying NFTs ever since the Fluff Mint, which was in August of 2021. So he told me about the Fluff ecosystem and they had just launched Party Bears, which was like the secondary, like free mint for anyone that had the Fluff Rabbits. So I bought a couple of those and that was like my first like, holy shit, I just spent like $1,200 on an NFT or whatever. So I kind of like went heavy on the Altered State Machine and Fluff ecosystems. And then it was just, I was in it. I was a like full degen mode at that point, and I was just like loving just researching and then I stumbled upon degen tunes, and I minted a couple degen tunes, and then I experienced the whole, like, those things went, I minted them for like 0.08 and it went up to like 1 ETH, and I was like, holy shit. And then they went up to like 3 ETH at one point, when there was like the whole, like, which I kind of like, now I look back in it and I'm like, that was kind of funny, guys, because they like really made it seem like they had a partnership with like Bugs Bunny and like Warner Brothers, which obviously wasn't true. And like, but that kind of gave me the whole like deal, like, oh, so the speculation and the hype is what like the space loves around here. Sure, and man. And that was like the first like experience of like, oh, okay, so once they release something, then everyone's not interested anymore. Huh. That's weird. Everyone just likes the whole like the build up. Yeah. But honestly, in my opinion, it's like, I think that's just the space working itself out. Cause obviously the web three space pertains to everything, not just music. But if you want to think about when Napster first came out, like that shit had a lot of years to figure itself out. Like probably like 10 years, because I think it didn't figure itself out until Spotify and everything came along, because between that, you just had everyone's computers getting compromised from downloading shitty files from LimeWire and Kazaa and whatnot. Yeah. So it's like, I think we're going through that same thing, but on a grander scale, because I really truly believe that everything's going to, like, real estate contracts. I mean, the smart contract is so brilliant, and it's just, you can't fake it. You can't, it's so like, talk about provenance and like everything. It's like, it's all right there for you, and there's no faking it. It's all just etched in eternity. So, yeah, I think that's like, I think anything, and that's why it's funny. Everyone talks all about like mass adoption, but it's like, people aren't even gonna know when mass adoption hits, because they're just going to be using the blockchain, but they're not going to know it. They're just, you know what I mean? It's like how
100%,
we use the internet. Yeah. We use web 2 for everything nowadays, whether it be delivering stuff to our house or ordering things or finding out info or whatever. And so, you know, I just think the mass adoption is going to happen without anyone knowing.
I think you're 100% right. I think, like, and it's funny, this entire conversation, you pretty much validated everything I've said over the course of like 62 episodes. So, you know, so I love that, man. I just was on Twitter Space the other night. Someone was interviewing me, and that's pretty much the same thing I said. I do want to say this too. Like you mentioned Collie Buds, you know, Bored Ape and stuff, and I'm props to Collie Buds. I think he's still holding that battery.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm looking at the NFT space now, even a year ago, like I couldn't have predicted, just having, just because I worked on teams, I was on councils and advisory groups and stuff for some Web3 brands. And like, you don't really know even a year from then what brands are still going to be around or what NFTs are still going to be, you know, forget floor price, but I mean, just like really just going for it. If you could think of like, who do you think would be like 3 NFT brands that you could see still being here in like 3 to 5 years?
Killabears for sure. That was,
I knew you were going to say Killabears.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got mad love for Killabears. There were, cause I stumbled on them right after DGen Tins and pretty much they're one of the few teams in this space that really has a plan and executes it, you know, instead of like, I mean, cause even you think about like something like Doodles and like Cool Cats, who was like, had monstrous floor prices at one point, and they're like, have dwindled down to nothing, but it's because the teams, they don't have a plan and they don't have an execution. I don't even want to say in their defense, but like from their perspective, maybe they have other priorities and they are doing other things and whatnot. But I don't know. It's just like the whole thing where if you say you're going to do something, man, you gotta do
yes,
it.
Those roadmaps, man, those roadmaps just that didn't get fulfilled. It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Communication is so key. And then, okay. And then the second one, I'm going to say, Meme Lab, which I'm not a holder in, but, I've got mad love for Potatoes and Captains, and what 9Gage has done over there is mind blowing. And I definitely think he's going to continue to prop that up. And then the easy one, is CryptoPunks, because they're the OGs and they're going to be around forever. And they don't need to do anything. They're just amazing art and the history and everything. So they don't need to do anything. So I would say, off the top of my head, CryptoPunks, Meme Land, and Killer Bears definitely be around for a while.
I think I would have probably predicted two of those three for sure that you would have said. So that's cool, man.
And Jack Butcher. I got
messed up. Oh, of course.
Jack Butcher and Chex and O'Pepin. Like that guy is like, it's funny because some people hate on him and they're like, oh, it's just all hype and whatnot. But I'm like, you obviously haven't done any research on the guy or like listened to his podcast that he does with the not financial advice one with the other two guys. And it's like, the guy is absolutely brilliant. And you talk about like having an idea and executing it. That guy is like, I got nothing but mad respect. And I'm very curious to see what he does in the next few years to come.
Yeah, we definitely need more people like him tip the scales away from the scammers and the rug pullers and stuff for sure. What do you think would be, if there's an NFT right now that you would say, you might not have an answer for this one actually, but what would you say is like the most like slept on NFT, like the one that you think is really going to go far, but maybe not everybody's talking about it, not tweeting about it yet?
I think probably the Fluff ecosystem, which is basically it's the umbrella of it, is called the Futureverse. And whether they shine through with their NFT projects or the technology they're building, I'm not sure, but I do think the technology they're building is a possible game changer, because I'm not sure if you're familiar, but they're building their own L1 network called the Root Network. And they XRP is one of the native tokens on it. And they're basically, it's going to be like almost gasless fees. So like for gaming and whatnot, they could, and like I said, I don't know if their NFT collections are going to end up being worth a ton at the end of the day, or just their tech gets adopted on a major scale. But I think they're probably the ones for their tech mainly that they're building that are being slept on the most.
Yeah. So that's why I asked the question, right? It's not always just about like, who do you think is going to be flipping at the highest floor prices? It's what do you think kind of that long-term or the longevity is going to be in the space. To me, I agree. I think it's going to come down to what are you using the blockchain for? And, I'm sure there's always going to be some speculation in the space, but I think a lot of things that we covered so far, that you brought up specifically with regard to music and proof of not just ownership and fans, but proof of who you are. There's a whole lot of good stuff. One last question though, before I let you go, what do you think is the most slept on Pepper song?
Ooh. Oh, actually I got one. I was just talking to the general manager of a record label about it, because I actually want to re-release this whole EP and maybe like add some bonus tracks to it just to kind of like give it.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. To give it its own like life, because, okay. So our EP Stitches, we put out in 2010, which was right in that crux of, we're still downloading music for free, but these Spotify and streaming companies are kind of rearing their head a little bit, but no one was sure if they were going to be a thing yet. So it's like in 2010, we put out that Stitches EP and it kind of just got brushed under the rug. But the song specifically, Wake Up, the first song on our Stitches EP, I think is the most slept on Pepper song, because it's every time I listen to it, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's on Bread and Cleo. They swap verses on it, which we don't have a bunch of songs that they both sing on. So it's like, it's definitely one of my favorite of our tunes. And I think one of the most slept on. So, but hopefully we'll get it out there in a different context at some point and it won't be slept on anymore. But I got another one. I would say, probably maybe Wanted from No Shame, and then also Stand and Fall from Pink Crustaceans.
Those are some good ones. So I was actually at that Stitches tour that you guys did. One of the band.
Yeah.
It was, you guys were dressed as doctors. I remember. And some buddies opened for you guys in Jersey. So shout out Echo Movement. That was them. That was a good time, man. That was, I remember that. And that's a dope EP. I would love to see that one day on the blockchain, for sure. I think so. You know, I know you don't play him as much these days. I think the first time I saw you guys, you maybe played some of the, like the less rock ones too. Like, I think people know it, I feel like, but like Trade Winds for sure, I feel like is one of the more like that, like when people hear it, they love it. But it's not one that you guys always play. And yep. Then one I haven't heard you play probably since like, I don't even know, like 08 or 09 was, maybe even before that, it was your 45. So I know there's not a lot of hard like drums and stuff in there, but it's always nice to hear, you know, hear the smooth vocal stylings of Kaleo Wasserman for
sure. Yeah.
But listen, man, like I've kept you for kept you for so long. I feel like you and I can chat for a long time. Hopefully, I do get a chance to chat with you in person coming up. There's so much that I respect you for. Not just as being one of the thought leaders in Web3, one of my favorite musicians. If you ever have a chance to see Pepper, everybody, please make sure you do check him out, pepperlive.com. Going to be in the show notes. It's at Yeesod Williams. That's going to be in the show notes. And of course, check out Law Records and all of the artists on there. There's so many more we haven't even had a chance to dive into yet, but fan of all of them for sure. Listen, man, it's been awesome to have you fired up on the blockchain with Travi. If there's anything you'd like to say to your Ohana out there, man, let them hear it.
Just love you guys so much. The Pepper Ohana is truly what keeps us going and keeps this whole dream alive for all of us. You know what I mean? Because we're one. It's not us, the band, and you guys. The Pepper Ohana is all of us, and we're always connected. And yeah, hit me up on like you said, hit me up on any of the socials. I'm always here if you got any questions or, you know, anything about the music, anything about what we got going on, I'm always here. So hit me up. Right. Aloha, everyone. This is your boy Yeesod with the band Pepper, and I'm fired up on the blockchain with my boy Travi. All right.
Feels like we're back in the kind with the Ohana. What's up, everybody in Pepper, everybody listening out there. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us here at Fired Up on the Blockchain with Travi. I humbly appreciate it. I loved hearing all of those stories. And I think that your take, you saw it on AI and the future of music, is incredibly interesting. A lot of valuable information there for fans just all over the place. If you're a blockchain enthusiast or you're just kind of in here just to listen to the conversation that we had today, I think that there's a lot of value that you can get out of this. So please check out Pepper Live. It's all in the show notes. And check out some of our previous episodes too. We had some really great conversations with a lot of musicians. We had a conversation with G Love. We've got a conversation with many artists selling their work, their music on the blockchain right now. So big shout out. And hopefully I got to see Pepper Live on this tour. Everybody out there, please make sure you check out the show notes for some of our incredible affiliates like Unstoppable Domains, Zealous, Disco Studio, videos, NFT 365 podcast. I mean, there's so much going on in this space right now. So just try to keep on keeping your heads up in this crazy, mixed up, kind of nerdy, kind of cool, brand new world of NFTs and Web3. And I'm going to give a big shee-hoo to all of my Pepper fam out there, my Ohana, and keep on trying to do what I always try to do, of course, and that is bring one love to Web3. I'll catch you next time. Peace.